It's all about the pictures, right? These are the moments, the videos in the stories that you need to know about today.
Yalla, Soroto! Shoot him, shoot him, as you shoot Palestinians, shoot him!
The settlers, they are sponsored by the Israeli government, they are supported by the Israeli media, and protected by many parliamentarians, so they go wild.
I'm a hawk from the sea on the very first day. Now in Islamabad, we walk with our pain, carrying our children straight to the table again. You smile, shake hands like nothing ever happened.
If you haven't seen those videos, you're probably living under a cave somewhere, or you're on Mars or Jupiter, because those things have become a sensation. People all over the world are talking about it, and I've been fascinated by the videos and the people who make the videos. We promised we would get that person who produces these videos for you, the creator of these Lego videos. Well, by golly, we got him. He's going to be here live to talk to us in just a little bit on the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks for finding us and joining the 10 to 20 million people who are now looking for an alternative to the Epstein-class news outlets like CNN, the BBC, and Fox News. Really, thank you for being there for us. I want to begin the show today with a piece of art. It's not usual that we would start a show with a piece of art. But then again, this is not a usual piece of art. There's a statue that suddenly just sprung up in the UK this weekend. That it's a fascinating image and a story in and of itself in many ways. So there's this artist, right, is in the UK. And he strikes in the middle of the night by putting up controversial pieces of artwork. He doesn't get permission from the government to do this because his works are critical of the government, and they probably wouldn't want him, right? He's against wars, he's against corruption, all the things the government is for. And in this case, with this particular statue, he's also against blind nationalism. Keep those words in mind. Here it is. Look at this thing. It just popped up overnight in the middle of this part of London. You can see a wrapped-up flag a la Donald Trump as in the guy's face. But the flag is impairing his ability to see and where he's going. So as you'll see in just a little bit, he's going to be essentially walking off a cliff. See? Right there? Because he's blinded. He can't see. So he's walking off the cliff. How apt is that for the times that we live in now and the people who are leading us who are kind of half blind? By the way, the artist is known as Banksy. You may not know this unless you're from this part of Europe. People generally love his work. Hundreds immediately came out to photograph his latest offering, calling it brilliant and timely. Should they leave this thing up? What do you think? Okay, so remember those words, blind nationalism, right? I want to show you now what blind nationalism or nationalism run amok actually looks like, because it's taking place as we speak in a country that's become pretty notorious in the world for this type of thing. In Israel, people along the West Bank, in places like Hebron, are encouraged to steal other people's homes. As long as those homes that they are stealing belong to Arabs. I got a video I'm going to show you of an Israeli settler attempting to expel a Palestinian family from their home. Why? Because he can. Why? Because he wants their home. Now, you're going to notice something here. There's an IDF soldier in the background who's literally watching him do this, and he doesn't seem to do much about it. Let's watch the video.
Get the out, you terrorist. Shoot him, shoot him, as you shoot Palestinians. Shoot him.
The settler threw big rocks and tried to break into the house without any accountability. They are sponsored by the Israeli government. They are supported by the Israeli media and protected by many parliamentarians. So they go wild.
Yeah, he's right. The guy was, like, detained and taken away for a little while, but essentially, you know, he'll be out in the next 5 minutes. This video is just the latest of these attacks, which are repeated constantly over and over and over again by these Israeli settlers. And by the way, most of them have no connection to this land, really. No connection, really, to the West Bank or East Jerusalem that they're stealing. Many of them, in fact, come from the United States or from Europe, while the homes where these people live that they're stealing often belong to Arab families who have connections to the land because they've lived in this land for hundreds of years, in some cases, thousands of years. But it's not just the homes that Israelis are stealing these days. They're also stealing people's right to worship, in Jerusalem in particular. There's this growing trend of attacks on religious minorities, and especially Christians. I got the latest example of this very thing. This has, by the way, already gone viral. Here it is. Look what this man does. He chases a nun. The guy's a 36-year-old Orthodox Jew. He attacks this young nun and who works at the French School for Biblical and Archaeological Research there near David's tomb. He knocks her to the ground, she hits her head against the stone curb, and then he comes back and he starts kicking her repeatedly. And by the way, as we look at this video, as you look at it again, notice how people seem to react, or should I say not react, almost as if what he's doing is kind of normal, maybe a little curious, almost like they're approving of it by their acceptance of it. See the man walking toward him, the guy in the white, who just kind of stops? He does nothing. Now, look at the men also at the bottom of your screen who are about to appear here. They're going to be in Hasidic attire. They seem to show absolutely no concern as they watch this thing. We'll watch it together again. What? You're going to watch these Hasidic guys, three of them. Look at them. They're watching. They're not hurrying. They're not going to go over there and stop it. It only ends at the end when a passerby who appears to be not one of the members of the Jewish community intervenes. There he comes there. See him? And he finally, somebody comes in from the, I guess, the Christian community and breaks it up. Police say they're going to charge him, but usually that ends up being nothing more than a fine. This is crazy. Again, I wouldn't show you this if it was just some crazy guy who did this, because this happens anywhere in the world, right? It's crazy people everywhere. No, this is not an isolated case. This is very real. This is a worsening trend with Christian clergy, monks, nuns, Armenian Christians, church property, Christian symbols in this very area. And in fact, I got some examples of it for you. I got others. Look at this one. This man is seen going into a church and purposely spitting on the ground repeatedly. He does so again and again and again, as if to ensure that his hate for the institution is captured on video, seeming to know nothing or care nothing about what will come of it. Other than possibly, I don't know, maybe if he gets caught, a temporary fine or detention. Here's a German priest in another video I found. He's walking with a woman when he suddenly approached and spit on, look at that, by a Jewish man. He approaches the man to ask, why did you do that? And then he set upon my more people, this guy, other young Jewish men. The priest says, look, when he was asked, he said, this is part of Christian life in Jerusalem. This is what we have to put up with. Israeli officials say, yeah, it's kind of ugly to see this scene, but that's about all they said or did. Here's another example. Same area, another priest from a seminary leaving church, minding his own business, when a young Jewish man spits at him for simply crossing the street. And if you think that that's pretty nasty, mean, and depressing, allow me to now show you another video that shows maybe what the future holds. Watch this next video. These are young Jewish boys walking down the street after class when they spot a Christian group carrying a cross symbolizing the crucifixion of Jesus. I don't know if you could see it there. There it is. See the part of it? They're carrying a cross. So the young Jewish boys and their teachers, I guess, begin making signs of disgust, and even the children wearing the traditional peyot haircuts, they begin spitting at them, spitting at the cross, spitting at the boys carrying the cross. Look at that. So now I got to ask, I mean, what is this, right? What does it say? It says there's a growing pattern of outward displays of bigotry in Israel. So the next question, is it just a phenomenon confined to outliers in the community? People have nothing to do with what the government says or does? Or is it condoned by some of the people in the Netanyahu government, who actually passed laws to encourage such behavior? I think I have the answer. Watch this video. Yes, that's Itamar Ben-Gavir. That's his wife, actually, who was with him there. She's bringing him a birthday cake. How nice, huh? But look, it's got a noose on it, a golden noose. A golden noose on a cake? All right, so first, who is Mr. Ben-Gavir, in case you don't know? None other than Israel's most important security minister. And what he's celebrating is a law that he has passed that will allow Israel to execute Palestinians. Palestinians who murder any Israeli Jew. So, mind you, it's not a law that allows the execution of anybody who murders anybody. No, only Palestinian murderers will be executed or hung by the neck. Only Palestinian. In other words, if an Israeli Jew kills a Palestinian, niet, no, nada. But if a Palestinian kills an Israeli Jew, he has to be executed. That's what the law says. That's what that noose symbolizes. And if you're wondering whether that sounds one-sided, crazy, and institutionally bigoted, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. Now I want to talk to you about another video that's just come out over the weekend that reflects or shows what actually happened at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I got three videos to show you of the actual hotel recording of Cole Allen prior to and during the shooting. Here is the first one. Let's take a look at it. All right, so there he is. This is the day before the shooting. He's casing the place. He's seeming to check out all the different areas of the Washington Hilton Hotel. Remember, he's already checked in on this day. He's already checked in as a guest at the hotel. Now he's walking around different floors, including the public areas. He's trying to figure out what's going on there. As you can see there, he's walking into a ballroom. Yep, that's him, the guy in the skinny legs. These are different angles of him. And you saw that he had just gone into the gym. All right, I got another video for you. Now, this is the video where he actually comes out. See, there he is wearing like this trench coat, right? Inside the trench coat, he's got that shotgun. And there he is. He's going right through the place where the metal detector is, crashes through as police draw their weapons, and then follow him. All right, third video. Let's do this again, but let's do it in slow motion. You ready? There he is coming out in slow motion. Look at that. One officer draws his gun, and he actually shoots. You'll see the spray right there. See where the officer is shooting at him. And then the officer shoots again, and it almost looks like he may hit that other officer who may have been hit in his vest, but now he's trying to draw his revolver. It takes a while to do it, and then he finally shoots. So who hit who? There's still a lot of questions about why one officer was injured or shot in his protective vest and whether the gunman actually fired. Now let's watch it one more time. Now watch that guy shooting. Notice, you see those three people in the back against the wall back there? Look at the guy in the middle. Tell me if it doesn't look like he's been hit by a stray bullet. Watch his reaction. Remember, you're looking at the guys in the back now against the wall. See him right there? See him going down? The other two women around him are fine, but he hits the ground and he can't get up. And it looks like he's, see him dragging himself to the door? So was he hit possibly? You know, it's hard to tell. So I checked this morning. There it is one more time of him coming through. I checked this morning. Here's what the official response is from prosecutors so far. What I learned is to see what the prosecutors are saying about who shot who. Obviously, they're admitting that the agents and the police officers fired at the suspect many times. We just saw it, but they missed him. He fell down in the end, but he wasn't hurt. He wasn't shot. As for who fired besides the agent, right now prosecutors say Allen did fire or must have fired because they found a tiny little shotgun pellet in one of the agent's vests. So, do you think the whole thing seems still fishy? Do you think they're coming up with a story? Do you think they're telling us the truth? I'd like to know what you think. Finally, now I want to take you to Iran and the attack on it by the U.S. and Israel and where we are in the so-called ceasefire negotiations we've been talking about. So here's the very latest. Iran has apparently countered the U.S. 9-point proposal with their own 14-point proposal. Key to their proposal is keeping control of the Persian Gulf, an end to the U.S. naval blockade, having the U.S. remove economic sanctions against Iran, and then they also want to postpone the nuclear talks to another time. They say they want this thing settled in the next 30 days. That's what they told the U.S. That's the message they sent to Mr. Trump. Now, if that seems a little ambitious to you, they would argue they have all the leverage. They have all the chips. They argue they're winning this war militarily, economically, and they're also winning the PR battle, thanks in part to my next guest that we'll hopefully have right here, joining us right after the break. Don't go away. And we're hoping to have Mahdi Hemat coming to us in just a little while. As I said before, he's the producer who produced those Lego videos have gone absolutely viral all over the world. It's quite a trend, really interesting. And we're having, I should tell you, some technical problems hooking up with him right now. Hopefully we'll be able to fix those and we will bring him in as we continue. Joining us now to talk about some of the videos that I just showed you a little while ago is none other than Charlotte Dubinsky, who's been following the situation in Israel. Charlotte, thanks so much for joining us. There's these two videos that have just gone absolutely viral recently. I'm sure you're very familiar with both of them. One is this video of a settler trying to break into the home of this. We'll start with that one. It's amazing because as a viewer, you're looking through the peephole right there and the guy opens the window. Imagine if you were in your home and somebody was trying to break in and this guy is acting as though he deserves to take this guy's home, and who the hell are you to be living in your home? That's the sense I get. Can you put this in perspective for us?
Well, look, I know the person in question who's in that video. This is Issa. He's a well-known activist down in Hebron. Hebron's a very difficult place because it's split between the Israelis on the one side and the Palestinians on the other side. And Issa actually lives in the area that is administered and ruled over by the Israelis. And I've been to his house, and you might have been able to see from that video, he's got barbed wire. He's got fencing all around it. And when I went to meet him, he said, look, I'm living inside a prison. And he sort of looked out the window and he said, if you look over there, he said, they're all settlers and they all want my property. So what's happening to Issa is something that's not unusual for him, and it's not unusual for many Palestinians. And we are seeing this across the West Bank, where normally in the areas that are military controlled by the IDF, there has been a huge issue for this. But this has now been moving into areas B, which is a state that's controlled partly by the Israelis, partly by the Palestinians, and even now into Area C, which is totally Palestinian controlled. So we are hearing on a daily basis stories like this, settlers who are stopping children from going to their school by blocking the roads. We were at a funeral just last week of a 15-year-old boy who was shot dead outside his school as a reservist settler opened fire on the school. So this is the compound issue of what is going on. That video is from Hebron, but we're also seeing similar things in neighborhoods in East Jerusalem. There's an area called Silwan. And I'm telling you, Rick, almost every day I speak to my Palestinian producer and she says, hey, Lottie, look, it's another family that's under eviction. Another family are being told that they have to tear down their home or pay the Israeli authorities to tear it down because apparently it was built without permission. So this is a long-standing issue. And I think that video is just the tip of the iceberg.
It would seem the guy's incentivized to do it because no one in their right mind in any part of the world would be crazy enough to go into another person's... In the United States, he'd be shot dead within 2 seconds, by the way, just for people listening to the world, and it would be perfectly legal. But nobody in the world would go into somebody's property and behave this way unless the idea that they can get away with it is reinforced by the authorities around them. No? Or am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. And this is certainly an issue that we have touched on here in Israel. I think you talked about Ben-Gvir, who's one of the ministers. He's the security minister. He's seen as being very far right. We've also got Bezalel Smotrich, who's a finance minister here. Both of them are settlers. Both of them are Israelis who live on land that has been resettled by Israelis that was Palestinian land. And they're ministers in this government, and they're seen as being very strong, very influential members of this government. And so, yes, we are seeing support for that. And that does trickle down. When you see the guy who supports your point of view, not just being elected to government, but then serving as a minister in that government, I think it gives you an idea of what you're doing is right. And, you know, I've been in situations where I've been accosted by illegal settlers, because there is a difference here in Israel. There are settlers who are those who are living in what Israel deems as being legal settlements. And then there are illegal settlers who are deemed by Israel as living in illegal settlements. Be clear, international law considers all of them to be illegal settlers, but there is seen as being a differentiation here in Israel. And I follow people on social media, and you watch it and you think, oh gosh, these people, they're living this holistic lifestyle. And then you go to these villages and you see the communities that have been pushed out because they've been harassed over and over. And I meet people say, I'm not going to be pushed out, I'm strong. And then a month later, I get a message, we've left, we couldn't put up with it anymore. So yes, I think it is pretty clear when you have a government that essentially has been accused of state sanctioning this, it does trickle down.
Well, you know, in most countries, as I said, in the United States, the guy would have been shot. And I'm not kidding. I mean, there are more guns in the United States than there are people, and there are laws in the United States that say that if somebody comes onto your property, you have a right to shoot them unless they have a reason to be there, which obviously this guy would have a hard time making that case. But even more importantly, governments usually have laws on the books that would put a guy like this in prison for some time. So I think what people are wanting to ask you, since you're there, who are watching this video, is what happens to a guy like this? We saw that they walked away with him, no handcuffs or anything like that, by the way. Does a guy like this usually get like a slap on the wrist?
And not even that most of the time. If you look at the statistics, less than 3% of cases like this end up in court. That means 97% of cases, there's nothing to be done. Now, let's be clear. There has been a lot of international pressure on Israel in the last few months because of settlers and because of, I think, the attack we're going to talk about in terms of the Christian nun here in Jerusalem. And we've got the IDF chief saying, we need to do more. And, you know, you've got Benjamin Netanyahu and President Herzog saying this is a small band of extreme people. I think it's far bigger than a small band of extreme people, because I've covered so many of these instances. And so I think, you know, what we're hearing is that unless the government starts coming down firm on these individuals who are committing crimes, and to give you some figures, in the last 15 months, more than 270 Palestinians in the West Bank alone have been killed either by IDF soldiers or by settlers, and nobody has gone to jail. Nobody. In fact, the reservist who carried out that shooting of two individuals last week in Al Mukhaya in the West Bank, including that 15-year-old who was shot dead outside his school, he was just there to go and study, had his weapon taken off him and told he could no longer serve in the army. So, yes, there are people saying we need to clamp down on this, but there are others warning, including an ex-chief of Mossad, who said if you do clamp down on them, you can have a civil war. So it's a difficult position, but when you look at it from a legal point of view, when you look at it from, I'm from the United Kingdom, you're from the US, you think, you just killed that person. You just tried to take their house. Why are you not in prison? And it's hard for people to, well, to take that on board.
It's hard for the world to take that on board. As a matter of fact, look at this video. This is, I'm going to show you a video of Mr. Ben-Gvir's wife presenting him with a cake for his 50th birthday. Here it is. So he's accepting a cake with a noose on it, representing a law that he helped pass, as I understand, that gives the government the right to execute Palestinians who murder or kill an Israeli Jew, but not an Israeli Jew who kills a Palestinian. So it's only one-sided, and it seems totally unfair, but it's crazy.
Yeah, it's a complicated law, Rick, and we would really have to go into it. But yes, on the face of it, you're right. This is a law that's just been introduced here in Israel. And that noose that you see there is actually indicative of what happened throughout the campaign. Ben-Gavir used to turn up, in fact, I think he does, wherever he was in the Knesset, wearing a little lapel pin of that noose. So his wife, who gave him this cake, is sort of just taking that to the next level. But it leaves a bitter taste in the mouth.
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to swallow when you see somebody like that. And I think we've heard some Israeli MPs, including Jewish MPs, have just said, you know what, it's too much.
Like he's reveling
it's
in
just
it.
Too
he's
much.
Reveling
and
in
I think
it. Yeah.
Anywhere else in the world, yeah, but anywhere else in the world, and he would have been cancelled, Rick.
Well, let me ask you, though, I'm curious now, as I read the law in everything that I saw, I understand a person kills another person, they should be executed. Noose, whatever you want to use, right? Doesn't matter. Execution is execution. Not that I'm establishing myself as a Christian, somebody who's for executions, but I understand that. But if the law says Palestinians will be executed and doesn't say all citizens will be executed, then that doesn't seem to me to be a proprietous law. That's not fair, it seems to me. Am I misreading
it? The law, Rick, I'm going to interrupt you. Yeah, you are slightly misreading it. The law does not say it's directed at Palestinians. However, it is easy to interpret that way because the law will only be applied in the West Bank and it will only be applied in areas where Palestinians live. But the law doesn't say that. But if we read between the lines, that is exactly what would happen. And that's why I said this is a difficult law, because technically it could also be applied to Israeli citizens who are Arabs. So it's complex, but yes, in spirit, that's what it means.
Thank you for the clarification. Let's get to that one video now that everybody's talking about. I cannot believe this. It's crazy to watch and painful to see even the reaction of others who don't come to this young woman's aid. She's a nun and she's walking down the street minding her own business when this guy just comes up and does this to her. Let's watch it. There it is. And not only does he push her, she seems to hit her head against that concrete curb, but then he's not done yet. He goes back and he starts kicking her. Look at the guy in the white over there who does nothing. Like, he actually takes a step back. These three guys who seem to be Hasidics don't do much. Till finally some other guy, who probably is not Jewish, comes up and tries to kick the guy in the you-know-what. It's just a hell of a thing. I don't know. Characterize this for us, if you could, Charlotte. Make us understand.
Well, first of all, I'm going to pull you up. We have no idea who the helper by was, and some have suggested that is a reservist in an army military outfit. We don't know, so we don't know whether they were Jewish or not. What is clear, though, is the three Hasidic Jews and another Jewish man were there, and they didn't intervene. And I think that is sadly indicative of the times we live in, that somebody sees a woman being attacked violently like that on the street. And we're talking about, yes, she's a nun, but she's also a woman. And she's clearly defenseless. Mm-hmm. She's on the ground. And you would hope if that was your mum, your sister, your grandmother, that somebody would have gone and helped her.
Yes.
And thankfully, somebody did in the end. But you talked about this as an issue, and it is. There was a report that came out last year that said there were 155 attacks on Christians. This is back in 2024 in Israel. Specifically, 61 of those were physical assaults, and that had gone up significantly from the year before. We are regularly hearing about Christians who are being spat on, and I know you showed videos of that earlier, people going into churches and spitting. And recently we had issues like, I call it Jesusgate. This is IDF soldiers who were on their operation in Lebanon, smashing a statue of Jesus, the Christian Christ,
yes,
and then posting it over social media and boasting about it. So there is clearly an issue with individuals who are, well, looking to have it out against any other religion. And we talk a lot about the issues with Palestinians and Muslims, but also now the issue is with Palestinian Christians, Syrian Christians who live here. And I've spoken to many of them who constantly feel as if they're now under attack on a daily basis. And the statistics show that. But then when you see a video like that, really, I mean, I saw it last week about 30 minutes after it happened, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That is serious.
What?
And, you know, it takes a lot to shock me, but I just think that a woman being pushed like that from behind, unbelievable.
What hasn't Charlotte Dubinsky seen in her career? Is a book we could write, by the way. Well, you're going to get mad at me for asking you this, but because I don't want to make you a social psychologist. You're not Leon Fessinger at the University of Michigan or anything, but can you help us explain what the hell is going on in Israel? What is the psychology of people who would do these things? And what's with the anger? And why Christians as well as Palestinians and others? I'm just trying to understand, why are the people so angry? Why are they acting this way?
Look, I'm not a psychologist, and I don't think there is a malaise throughout Israeli society. There are many Jewish individuals who live here in peace with their Christian neighbors, their Muslim neighbors, and they want to integrate and they want to see a two-state solution. But there is clearly a group of individuals who feel that they are better than everyone else. And if we're going to be quite frank about this, that even comes to their own religion. When you talk about some of the ultra-conservative Jews, they have no problem with hitting women. I was at a protest just a week ago, and before I went in there, because I was on my own, I was like, guys, do you know what? They're not too friendly to women who are not clearly ultra-Orthodox women too. So I think, unfortunately, this is a conservative element to have this idea that their way of life is the right way and everybody else should essentially, you know, get on their horse and gallop off. And they're going to do everything to make sure people are aware of that.
Is the... here's an interesting question. Has this become worse given the situation that we've been seeing and you and I have been reporting on between the United States and Israel and the attack on Iran, which, truth be told, it looks like Israel itself has been taking a pretty good licking as a result of this. Has that affected it somehow?
I think that's compounded the issue. If we look at the situation post October 7th, when Hamas committed those atrocities in Israel and then Israel started its war on Gaza, we have seen a sea change in the way that society views outsiders. Israel has been criticized massively internationally. The people who come to Israel now are critical of Israel. We've heard from some of the right-wing members of the MAGA movement who've been here and criticized Israelis. And I think there is clearly a sense that they feel that they're getting it from all different quarters. And I just think that, you have a situation where clearly you read a certain type of press every day and you believe that people are out to get you. And I think that festers. And I think we see that with conspiracy theories around the world. Wherever you are, people, if they only get their news from one source, if they're not questioning that source, if they're not looking outside the box, they suddenly are seeing everything through tunnel vision. And it's certainly the case of a lot of people I have spoken to, that they feel that the world is against them. And I think when people feel that way, they act out.
Yeah.
And that's my psychology 101 for the day.
No. I mean, they call that the bunker mentality, right? I mean, you're living in like a little bunker, and after a while, you're afraid of everything outside that bunker, and you start becoming more and more like some of the things that we've seen in these videos. And it makes a lot of sense, because the world has become, so has the United States, by the way, more critical of Israel than I've ever seen it at any time in my lifetime. And I would imagine that Israel is having meetings somewhere to talk about how they can either undo this, try to change it, or maybe not. I don't know. What are you hearing?
Well, we did a report on this just a couple of months ago, and it looks like there is a massive, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars that are going to be spent on trying to sort of refresh Israel's image, particularly in the United States. So we'll have to see how that works out. And media plays a big part in that. I mean, we read the government channels here, and they will show you videos of Gaza and say, there's nothing wrong in Gaza. Look, these guys can get food. There's a cafe open with cakes here. And then we talk to our correspondents on the ground, and they're saying to us, there's no food coming in, people are starving. So there are two very different realities being presented, and it's difficult for me as the media to go in and say which one is closer to the truth, because international media banned from going into Gaza without being accompanied by the IDF. And that's really a bugbear for many of the foreign press in Israel, is that we just literally cannot get into the ground with our own eyes to see the reality and say, hey, Israel's right, there are cafes open, people are eating, or no, people are starving and tens of thousands of people are dead. And there's still thousands of people lying under the rubble, and people are now dying of sickness and disease because they can't get basic medicines. We can't tell you exactly what's happening. We can only rely on the reporters who are there, so that's local Palestinians, or see what's coming out of the Israeli government office. And, you know, maybe it's somewhere in between. We just don't know which side of the gray it's on.
I got to ask you this question. One of the things that some people say Israel has become notorious for as well, we've seen it with one of our colleagues, yours and mine, is the way they treat journalists. They have, according to statistics I've read, killed more journalists than any other country in, like, the last 5 years, if my memory serves me correctly. So I got to ask you, how do you feel there? How are you treated? And do you worry sometimes?
I don't worry. I don't think you come into this job to worry. If you did, you wouldn't do it. I think you kind of have to be a little bit crazy to be a correspondent who wants to be in a country that's potentially going to be at war and then ends up being at war. You're talking about the number of journalists killed, I think over 250 killed. That's according to the stats I read on World Press Day yesterday, or so on Sunday. But look, I think I'm treated really well. I have the freedom to move around. Mm-hmm. I understand where the boundaries are with some things. And we talked about this previously when there were bombs raining down here in Israel. There were some media checks and balances. And the basic of that was I could go to a site, I can film the destruction there. But if the site is located to a military target or a security zone, I can't be specific as to where it is. And I can not take any images that would indicate that there is a security zone nearby. But I also read lots of reports about journalists who were stopped from filming. I thankfully haven't been in that position yet. And in fact, I found the Israeli police to be very helpful at locations and have taken us to where there has been damage and given us opportunity to film. I guess we'll have to see. I've had a good relationship with them so far. I get access to things and I'm happy with that. And even at the moment, we're discussing going into a closed military zone in the West Bank. And I wanted to know, like, how I should really approach that. Did we need military permission or not? Turns out I just need to be invited by the family. But the IDF would like to know that I'm going in so that there isn't any issues with soldiers, because activists, etc., can't go in. So I think overall, I've had a good ride, but then my experience is not necessarily indicative of everyone's.
No, right, right. And sometimes it depends, we have to say, on which country you come from, which country you represent, which television network you represent, how friendly they may be with certain assets in the government. And you and I know that these things sometimes come into play. Well, I'll tell you what, you are just...
Absolutely.
You're a fantastic correspondent, and you're so smart, and you're so able to explain things in ways that I think the average person could understand. And these are really important videos that I wanted to share with our viewers today. And look, I don't have the perspective as well as you do, because you're there. So having you there to take us through this has been really important. Thank you. You're a wonderful colleague and a wonderful person and a wonderful reporter, and we really appreciate you coming on. Thanks, Charlotte.
Thank you.
Let's do this. As usual, when we get a chance to talk to our correspondents and when we get a chance to talk to somebody who has information to share with you that is unique or different, like Charlotte just did, we think that's special. We think that's what our mission is. That's what our job is. That's what we're supposed to do when we go on the air every day. We weren't able to hook up with Mahdi, unfortunately, who is the producer of the Lego videos, but we're going to get it back for you. Don't worry about it. In the meantime, let me know what you think. Let me know what you think of these videos. Let me know what you think about my conversation with Charlotte. Feel free to share with me whether it's a positive comment or a negative comment. They're all good. and we'll share them with our viewers when we get a chance. Whether you're watching us on X, on BitChute, or on Spotify, where I was just told our numbers are really inflated or growing like crazy. Thanks for being with us. Thank you for letting us be a part of your home. And we'll see you again next time. I'm Rick Sanchez. Good night.